you give context in a biography of the places that a person lived and the historical time in which they lived. I felt that the friends that he had at various times were also essential context for understanding him.
I'm William O'Flaherty. Welcome to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm very pleased to have Colin Duryea on the show today. To call him an expert on C.S. Lewis doesn't begin to describe him, as in many ways he is an expert to the experts. He is one of the top scholars on Lewis. He is also the go-to person for all things Tolkien. There are a number of books that we could talk about that he's done on Lewis, but the one we're going to explore today is a brand new one for 2013 called C.S. Lewis, A Biography of Friendship, just being released in early June in the U.S. It is just hitting the shelves in the U.K. Welcome to the show, Colin.
Thank you for having me on your program, William.
Well, I do have a wide range of listeners, and some may not be as familiar with you. So before getting into C.S. Lewis, A Biography of Friendship, share some about your background by describing how you first came to read Lewis and then how you first began to write about him.
In my childhood, I missed out on the Chronicles of Narnia, and it wasn't until I was near the end of high school. I was what a kind of school in the UK we call a grammar school. There aren't so many of them now. But anyway, in one of our classes, we were reading C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. The idea was to give the boys an idea of some of the background of British history and literature and so on. I was a believer by then, and but I was immediately attracted by Lewis's prose, his combination of very clear thinking and deep imagination. And as was the custom, any writer that I was attracted to, I started to read everything I could lay my hands on. I didn't realize what a large task that would be in the case of C.S. Lewis. When I was reading his autobiography, Surprised by Joy, I came across this name of one of his friends, Tolkien, and that led me on to reading Tolkien as well, and eventually on to various other of Lewis's friends. Now, soon after that, I was at university and I started to write articles about C.S. Lewis. I wrote a series of six monthly articles for a monthly magazine, which was basically biographical of Lewis. But even in those early days, I introduced the Inklings to the unsuspecting readers. And later, as I graduated, I started to give talks on Lewis as well. But that's really how it all started. It's rather like a conversion story, really, when you ask people how they got into C.S. Lewis.
Yes, indeed. Well, now, turning to the new book, a perceptive person might glean from your subtitle what your approach is. Obviously, it has to do with friendships. First, tell us why you took this approach and how you present it in your book, C.S. Lewis, A Biography of Friendship.
Well, I have to come clean and say there are lots of biographies out there on Lewis already. Some were written quite a few years ago, but they tend to be rather analytical, you know, dealing with themes and ideas of Lewis. I wanted to get to the heart of the person in telling his life, a biography that goes from birth to grave, basically. And one thing that has struck me almost ever since I started to write and talk about C.S. Lewis was you couldn't really detach him from his friends in order to understand him. And very often when people are writing biographies, they tend to isolate the person rather and have a minimum of reference to friends, even important ones. So I decided to concentrate on his friendships. I couldn't cover all of them. I chose a selection of key friendships. And the idea was that just as you give context in a biography of the places that a person lived and the historical time in which they lived, I felt that the friends that he had at various times were also essential context for understanding him. And so it was through the friends I felt that we would have new light on his life.
To follow up, though, since I don't have my copy yet, since it's not out in the U.S. until June, in the book itself, do you just have chapters devoted to a individual friend, or how is that structured?
Well, I structured the book table of contents roughly chronologically. The first chapter, for example, is called A Northern Irish Childhood. But many of the chapters do identify a key friend. For example, chapter two is School Days and Arthur Greaves, who was one of Lewis's earliest friends. And then a later chapter is titled Student Days, Oxford and Mrs. Janie Moore, covering and the beginnings of his friendship with Mrs. Moore. And another chapter refers to Owen Barfield in the title, and then Tolkien. Tolkien comes in a couple of times because of the great importance of that friendship. A later chapter is called The Wartime Years and After, Enter Charles Williams. And yet another chapter is entitled The Surprising American, Mrs. Joy Davidman Gresham, about the subject which has become familiar to so many through the film Shadowlands.
Among the books about Lewis that you have written, one was Tolkien and Lewis, The Gift of Friendship. How does this book differ, or was it kind of a logical extension of that one?
Well, it was the book, The Gift of Friendship, which really made me think about exploring more of the friendships in a biography. All the time that I've been reading and writing and talking about Lewis and Tolkien, I've also been very interested in the Inklings group, the large group, and have done quite a bit of research on them. The book, Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, The Gift of Friendship, actually was an account of the growth and nature of their friendship. And I had brief biographies in that of Tolkien and Lewis for the light that their lives shed upon the nature of the friendship. You can't really talk about it just in the abstract, but you need to have those concrete references. So it was more a focus upon the friendship itself and the nature of the friendship, whereas the focus of C.S. Lewis, the biography of friendship, is Lewis's life. It's always in the foreground, and the friendships are coming naturally as part of who he was, shedding light on him.
Now, you've already mentioned some of the names. You can go ahead and mention them again in terms of elaborating on why they are noteworthy. In other words, who were some of the most significant friendships that Lewis had, and why were they noteworthy?
Well, I mentioned the earliest friendship. This was with Arthur Greaves, who Lewis met when he was a teenager. He was a neighbor of C.S. Lewis on the outskirts of Belfast. This friendship was so significant that when you look at the massive three volumes of Lewis's correspondence that are now published, a great many of the letters in them are addressed to Arthur Greaves, who was a friend from those teenage years right through to Lewis's death. And one of the interesting things about Arthur was that he wasn't an academic like so many of Lewis's friends. He had something in the way that he saw the world which deeply attracted Lewis. And in effect, Arthur was really a soulmate of Lewis. And it was this friendship in the way of seeing which was so important in that friendship. And it gave Lewis ease in writing to him, where he could share all kinds of things that he wouldn't necessarily share with others. Now, I'll quickly mention some of the other important friendships. Owen Barfield was very important in the 1920s, in particular, when Lewis at that time was an atheist, and Barfield had become a follower of somebody called Rudolf Steiner, who was an anthroposophist, which was a kind of a mix of Christianity and esoteric thought. Barfield was very interested in the whole question of poetic language and the way that imagination functions in the way that we grow in our knowledge. Lewis had very different ideas of the imagination for much of this time, and they had a real ding-dong battle, which Lewis called the Great War, where Barfield was continually trying to change Lewis's thinking, and Lewis was continually trying to change his friend's thinking. So it was a very, very important point in Lewis's life. And the friendship with Barfield continued, and he became one of the Inklings, even though he wasn't able to attend very often. And I think I'm going to, this would take rather a long time to go through all the friends. I think people might have to read my book.
Well, exactly. Yeah, just giving them enough taste to want to know more. Exactly. Well, now, what parts of Lewis's own stories, his fictional works or his nonfiction books or essays, tell about what Lewis thought about friendships?
This is a subject I cover quite deeply in my book, The Gift of Friendship, but I do touch on it in the biography as well. And there's actually, you could make a huge study of Lewis's views of friendship, and people in analyzing it often differ about how they understand it. But one of the great sources, which I've already alluded to, is the letters of Lewis, just to see the huge proportion of the letters, say, to Arthur Greaves. And the friendships are very much built into the letters. Obviously, there's not many letters to Tolkien because they had so much daily contact that they very rarely wrote to each other. But other people who were further away, like Barfield and others, had more correspondence. And then for several years, Lewis kept a diary, which he actually wrote with Mrs. Janey Moore in mind. He read much of the diary to her as it was written. So that's a very interesting element of friendship in the production of the diary. Now, most important probably is a chapter in a book called The Four Loves that he wrote, where he devotes entirely to friendship, along with other key loves such as agape and eros. And in some of his fiction, he portrays friends, some of his Inkling friends. In his science fiction, he had a character that was rather Tolkien-like, a philologist like Tolkien. And in the final book, he has the same character who becomes more like his friend Charles Williams. So that's very interesting in terms of seeing how the friendships butt into his writings. And finally, at the end of his life, he wrote one of his best books called Letters to Malcolm, chiefly on prayer, where he has this imaginary correspondent called Malcolm. And we learn a little bit about Malcolm and his family as the correspondence goes on. We only have the side of the correspondence that Lewis is writing to him. But again, it's in the context of friendship, as his life is, as I try to show in my biography.
What can be learned from the way Lewis allowed his friends to impact his life and he in turn impacted them?
Well, I think one of the striking things is that Lewis didn't operate in an isolated way. He wasn't individualistic in the way that he wrote and he taught and he functioned. He very much had a sense of a larger community that human beings are in. And friends were essential to his life. So this is something he seems to have grasped from very early on in his life when he forged this very deep friendship with Arthur Greaves. In a way, it goes against the myth of the isolated artist in the garret who suffers in silence. And then, we learn from the depths of suffering all about some life. He valued friendship. He needed one thing he needed to do was to read aloud from work that he was writing, particularly fiction and poetry. And this he did throughout his life, not just when the Inklings group was around, but also to other friends outside of that group. One in particular was Roger Lanslyn Green, where he shared early drafts of the Narnian stories, and Green was very encouraging to him in writing that. So Lewis allowed himself to, he opened himself up to his friends, and he took on board comments that they made. Some people have said that he never changed anything when he wrote it. It was perfect when it came from his pen. But that is not true. When you look at manuscripts that he wrote, he did change, and he responded, say, to publishers' comments as well about his writings, and certainly responded to his friends.
Now, I understand you have another Lewis book releasing later this year, 2013, and it's a substantially revised version of a previous work. Briefly, tell us about that, as I hope maybe we can do an entire podcast on it.
Well, the book is going to be called I must remember to say it the American way, the A to Z of C.S. Lewis. Here we would say the A to Z of C.S. Lewis. It's a substantial revision of an earlier book called the C.S. Lewis Encyclopedia, which in turn was based on a shorter book, which was the first book on Lewis that I wrote, which was called the C.S. Lewis Handbook, which was published here in the UK and in America, and helped me to be seen as somebody who was worth listening to on C.S. Lewis. I hope that was a well-founded opinion. But anyway, I've substantially enlarged it because the Lewis Encyclopedia was actually written 13 or 14 years ago, and there's been lots of development in Lewis studies since then by various scholars. And I've done a lot of work myself, say, on the Inklings and others. And so my revision takes into account, for example, the fact that Michael Ward has appeared on the scene with his wonderful book, Planet Narnia. And then Don W. King has been doing a lot of work on the poetry of Joy Davidman, which is the most interesting. I built some of that new material into this brand new edition.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to that because I have both editions of the C.S. Lewis Handbook and the C.S. Lewis Encyclopedia.
Uh-huh.
Well, now, in case we don't get into your back catalog of works in the near future, the other main titles I'm aware of that you have is A Field Guide to Narnia and then the C.S. Lewis Chronicles. Could you briefly describe each of those?
Yes, the Field Guide to Narnia was written with the knowledge that several of the films about Narnia were to appear in the near future. So I wrote it a little bit ahead of that, of the appearance of the first film, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And the idea was to provide a guide to the Narnian books, which was easy to access for the reader, but in the process to introduce some of the very deep themes that run through the stories. People often have the attitude that if a book's written for children, it means it's very easy to write and it hasn't got much depth. But the opposite is true. Children's books are very, very difficult to write. And certainly the Chronicles of Narnia have great depth. And of course, the depth's been revealed even more by the work of Michael Ward recently. So part of the book was just an A to Z of characters and places, but there are substantial chapters on themes and about the character of Aslan and so on. Now, the other book is the C.S. Lewis Chronicles. It's a rather a quirky approach to biography because it's written as a combination of a day book and miscellany. You know, you have Shot's Miscellany and other books of miscellany that have been popular. The idea being that as you go through Lewis's life, you try and write. I tried to write it as if it was a day book. So it was blanketing out the whole matter of hindsight, which tends to dominate a normal biography. So you get the feeling that you're living Lewis's life with him as you go through it. It had to be very selective because of the constraints of length on the book. But I was able to represent, most years in his life in some way and put in some interesting pieces of miscellany, including some of Lewis's very funny jokes and repartee.
Yeah, that's a very good book. I've enjoyed that with some of the work that I've been doing here recently. I've been doing a monthly on the Harper Lewis blog about things going on in his life, and then a weekly on my own website. So that's been a great resource to me.
Oh, good.
Well, now, let's consider Lewis in general terms. I like to ask all the authors that I speak with and this type of question. That is, why do you think Lewis is still important to people 50 years after his death? Why is he still making an impact?
This is a million-dollar question, really. There was a point when Lewis resigned himself to the fact that he would soon be forgotten as a writer. He'd had his day. He had no idea that he would still be read 50 years after his death. I think let's start by looking at the quality of his writing. For many years, literary critics and so on often dismissed him, but he's becoming more and more accepted as a canonical writer, somebody who's in the mainstream of literature. That may be a good or bad thing, but certainly become a greater appreciation of C.S. Lewis's quality of C.S. Lewis's writing. We mentioned Michael Ward, but mention him again that he's done a lot of work on the detailed writing in the Chronicles of Narnia, showing the qualities of the books. And there's certainly room for more stylistic analysis of Lewis. Let's hope we see more of that, because I think that there's lots to be found there. And also his scholarship has lasted. There's not many literary critics whose works of scholarship are still in print 50 or 70 years later. When you think of his book, The Allegory of Love, and his history of English literature in the 16th century, excluding drama, and the enormous popularity of the Narnian stories. I'm not so sure what the sales are on the science fiction stories, but I was talking to a leading science fiction writer several years ago, and I asked him what he thought of Lewis, and he had a very high opinion of his science fiction writing, which pleased me no end. I think, to me, his vision is very much in the center of his appeal, the way that he helps us to see the world in a fresh way. Very often in a new way. One of his favorite themes was undeception, removing the kind of deceptions which prevent people from seeing reality properly and seeing other people that they love and so on properly. And I think This is one of the effects that his books often achieve on readers, this idea of undeception, of opening new doors, throwing open the windows, seeing things in a fresh way. Going back to what first attracted me to C.S. Lewis is a combination of powerful lucid reasoning and imagination, the ability to come up with analogies that just stay in your mind because they're so powerful and so appropriate. Many of these things are the reason, I think, why people continue to read, because they don't just read his fiction. Many people read different types of his books but carry on reading them. So he's like several authors all rolled into one in a way. There's not many people that can combine fiction writing with prose writing, for example. His poetry in itself is quite minor, but still very enjoyable. And as has been shown recently, where the strength of his poetry is actually in his prose, in his prose style and in his fiction, where he's able to create magical worlds like Narnia or Perelander in his science fiction. So it's all these kind of things. Perhaps at the bottom line, Lewis comes over as an attractive person in his persona. He's got a certain persona in his writing, a distinctive voice. In the Narnian stories, he comes over as a kindly uncle. But when he's writing scholarship, you feel like he's not patronizing you. He assumes that you'll be able to keep up with him when you're reading, even though the truth is that his knowledge of the classics and of Old English, Middle English, and the whole range of English literature is way ahead of what you are. I think I can say that safely. I haven't met many people in the course of my life who can keep up with Lewis in terms of, say, his wide reading.
Yes, it was indeed vast. And then what you were just saying earlier about him being so successful in a variety of areas in writing, I've sometimes described, I don't know how the illustration would work in the UK, but it's like Lewis was a top-notch baseball, basketball, and football player. He was like, well, one of the tops in each of those three, which some people have done maybe one or two, one very well and the other not so great, but he was like in the top 10 in each of those three. Is just how good he was with his various areas of writing. Well, now, returning to your latest book, C.S. Lewis, A Biography of Friendship, what final words do you have to help the listeners to convince them to pick up a copy, as well as be sure to mention your website?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, there are quite a few biographies of Lewis out, and also there's an enormous quantity of books about him. What I feel is that mine gives a way into the range of Lewis's work, thought, and imagination. It doesn't just concentrate on one aspect of him, say his thinking. Through the variety, diversity, many-sidedness of his life, I think I give an insight into the range of who he was as a person. Is he the person of intellect and imagination, person who was friends to many, the person who loved cats and dogs as well as Edmund Spenser's The Fairy Queen. And I must confess, I find him intensely fascinating, and I don't tire of reading him, and similarly with his friends. And I hope I've conveyed some of that in my book, that people will realize that this is a very interesting, warm person that they really want to get to know better. So I've tried very hard to give readers a picture of Lewis as a person, complex, generous, and an intriguing person, if we only take his conversion from atheism to theism, that is, belief in God, and then to Christianity. He confesses he was a reluctant convert from atheism. So we can engage with this. We can be attracted by the fact that he didn't find it easy to change one's whole way of approach to thinking and imagining and so on was a major thing. I think that I've tried to convey how Lewis is somebody that has helped many modern people to find faith in this complex world in which we live. And I start the book by referring to a proverb which is found in many languages. And this proverb goes along the lines that, tell me who your friends are, and I will tell you who you are. So the idea, you know, the simple idea is that the friends you have reveal who you are. And I felt that by focusing on central friendships in this book, which I don't think anybody's done to this extent, helps us to know Lewis in an intimate way, in a sense, without being intrusive into his privacy and so on.
And then finally, where can people find you online?
Well, I've got, I'm on Facebook under the title Colin Durier, comma, writer. And I've also got a website, www.colindurier.macmate.me.
All right. And then your last name is Durieze, for those who aren't familiar with that. So
thank you.
We encourage everyone to check out his website and also to check your local bookstore or online retailer for this brand new book, C.S. Lewis, A Biography of Friendship, as well as his other works that have come out, and then the other one that's going to be coming out. We could spend an entire broadcast or several about the works that you've done on J.R.R. Tolkien, so we encourage people to check out that as well. And we also encourage you to consider sharing this interview with other people if you enjoy it, as well as to visit EssentialCSLewis.com for other interviews and resources on C.S. Lewis. Well, thanks, Colin, for being a guest on my show.
Well, thank you, William. I've really enjoyed being on it.